Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. First, a word from our sponsors. Our show today is brought to you by Rob Grindstaff, author of the book Hannah's Voice, and it's a great libertarian-ish novel that you guys should check out. You can get it at Amazon.com if you guys are looking for some summer reading. It's about a girl who loses her voice, and the entire country plunges into chaos trying to find out why this little girl will no longer speak. And I wanted you guys to check that out because Rob Grindstaff has generously sponsored the podcast and in a way to get the word out about his new book. So go to Amazon.com and buy a copy of Rob Grindstaff's book, Hannah's Voice, and we now return to our show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Today we're going to be talking about a very controversial topic. It was something that was very upsetting for Laura and I to be doing a lot of research on this morning. We're going to have some real hard talk about racism. We're going to be talking about libertarianism. We're going to be talking about the history of racism in the United States in the context of the shooter in Charleston, South Carolina. We're going to be talking about the Confederate flag. And this morning we saw the news hook. There's a lot of news hooks, obviously. But Mitt Romney said to take down the Confederate flag. And the 2016 GOP hopefuls, for the most part, have all said that they need to leave South Carolina to decide what South Carolina should do. And of course, there's Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, who says that this is part of our history. He said he would be fine if the citizens of South Carolina would vote to possibly remove it because it exists on the grounds of the state capitol. It's not like flying at the state capitol. It's on a memorial for Confederate veterans in South Carolina. And you know what? I bet, Laura, that if the citizens of South Carolina had a vote on whether or not to remove that flag,
it wouldn't be removed.
They probably wouldn't remove it.
No.
And we're going to talk today about the history of not just the Confederate flag, but of the movement of Confederates in the United States and how their associations cross over to the Liberty Movement, because I think that anybody who has been in the Liberty Movement long enough knows that there has been a long tradition of racists attaching themselves to our ideas simply for the fact that they think that libertarian ideals will at least allow them to be racist on their own private property. And that is in essence true, but it is a problem because it means that we as classical liberals have to repudiate the racists in our ranks. And we've seen that a lot of these presidential candidates that you revealed this morning, Laura, that there is a man by the name of Earl Holt, who's been donating, who's a known racist, who's been donating to these presidential campaigns. Can you tell us a little about this?
Yeah, so there's an article by Politico, and it talks about how Earl Holt, president of the St. Louis-based Council of Conservative Citizens, has donated to Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, and Rick Santorum over the years. And he's also very well known for his very provocative statements on the Blaze. One of them being, if you think you can educate them, and this is in reference to blacks, if you think you can educate them or embarrass them or reason with them or that your Christian compassion will be reciprocated, then you are the kind of person who will be completely baffled when they kill you, rape your entire family, and burn your house to the ground.
And this guy is funding our heroes. He's sending money to Rand Paul, Ted Cruz. Who else has he sent money to?
Rick Santorum was the only one noted.
Not our guy, but Mitt Romney. I think he gave money.
Yeah, he also gave money to Mitt Romney.
Right. And we're going to be talking about racists in the Liberty Movement because Laura is my fresh-faced young intern. Got exposed to the Ron Paul newsletters today. She had never heard or read these newsletters, which were these writings that came out from a strategy that they called the Paleo Strategy, and it had a very negative reflection on Ron Paul's presidential campaign, both in 2008 and 2012. And I'll talk about that influence and what it did to the campaign from my perspective, having worked on as a volunteer for Ron Paul in 2008 and 2012. So we'll get into that. But let's start with the news. This is from Politico. Mitt Romney says, take down the Confederate flag in South Carolina. Mitt Romney showed his enduring influence on the Republican presidential field on Saturday when he weighed in on the national debate over the Confederate battle flag, calling bluntly for South Carolina to remove it from the state capitol in the wake of the shootings in Charleston. Take down the Confederate flag at the SC Capitol, he said. To many, it is a symbol of racial hatred. Remove it now to honor Charleston victims. It was hours before the GOP's 2016 contenders followed with statements of their own, illustrating their reluctance to wade into a conversation that could put them at odds with the base of a party with deep roots in the South and a complicated racial legacy. Now, you think it's bad enough for Republicans, but it's even worse for libertarians. Jeb Bush was the first candidate to issue a statement noting that as governor of Florida, we acted, moving the flag from the state grounds to a museum where it belonged. But even Bush declined to demand that South Carolina remove the controversial flag, which alleged Charleston shooter Dylan Roof was shown brandishing in photos that emerged Saturday on a website reportedly linked to him. Now, I don't know why Politico used the word alleged Charleston shooter Dylan Roof, because he did confess, so I don't think we have to call him alleged anymore.
Sure, I didn't catch that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeb Bush, now he acted unilaterally in Florida as governor to remove the Confederate battle flag from the state grounds. They put it in a museum. But in South Carolina, they have an actual, is it a law or it's an ordinance that the governor of South Carolina cannot unilaterally remove the flag from the state house grounds. Sure. And what that means is that that the legislature has to vote to remove it. Now, if the legislature in South Carolina votes, they have to get a 2/3 majority, which is a supermajority, in order for that to be removed. You think they're going to do it? Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not. And you know, this has complications for the presidential race. You know, Ron Paul did notoriously terrible in South Carolina in 2008 and 2012, and a lot of impartial observers and some partial observers have stated that Rand Paul has absolutely zero chance to win the South Carolina primary. Don Rasmussen, writing for the Libertarian Republic, he's our weekly presidential breakdown writer, and he thinks that South Carolina is a lost cause for Rand Paul because there's not a lot of love for libertarians in the Deep South, in the sense that the Republicans do see us more as liberals. Which is a good thing because it means we're not racists.
How dare you?
Yeah, because it means that we are the more liberal, the classical liberals of the party, and that people like Lindsey Graham are going to do, it's his home state, so he's probably going to do better in the South Carolina primary than Rand Paul. But that is not a reflection of the Republican Party as a whole in the country. It's just the most racist, redneck, sectionist sector of the United States. And we're going to be talking about racism. And if you're already pissed off, too bad. Bush says this is a very sensitive time, South Carolina. Our prayers are with the family and the entire state. Following a period of mourning, there will rightly be a discussion among leaders in the state about how South Carolina should move forward. And I'm confident they'll do the right thing. Now, Marco Rubio, Florida senator, pointed to Bush's decision in 2001 to quietly move Florida's Confederate flag from the state capitol to a museum. Like Bush, Rubio said today's decision is in South Carolina's hands. In Florida, it's not up to our... It was moved to a museum. I support that decision, Rubio said. And I think ultimately the people of South Carolina will make the right decision for South Carolina. And I believe in their capacity to make that decision. Asked if moving the flag was an example of the right decision, Rubio wouldn't say. See, these guys, they don't want to piss off...
They want to dance around.
They want to dance around it because they don't want to piss off the racists. Mm-hmm. They don't want to piss off the racists. And that's what makes me upset. It makes me very upset. Because we're going to call out some of the racists in our own party before this episode's over. Rubio's comments to reporters came somewhat ironically during the Miami-Dade Republican Party's Lincoln Day dinner, named after the president who crushed the South's rebellion, which began when South Carolinians attacked Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. Other Republican contenders were likewise cautious to varying degrees. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker said in a statement, "The placement of a Confederate flag on the Capitol grounds is a state issue, and I fully expect the leaders of South Carolina to debate this, but the conversation should wait until after the families have had a chance to bury and mourn their loved ones." Rand Paul declined to comment. Now, Rand Paul's got in trouble in the past because he hired my good buddy, Jack Hunter, to work for him, and there was a public sort of excoriation that occurred where Jack Hunter got in trouble because he was the Southern Avenger for quite some time, and that's what he called himself, and it became his nickname. Even though Jack is not really a racist, the problem was that Jack identified with his personality. He became this sort of radio host personality from the Deep South, and he would wear a Confederate luchador mask, and Rand Paul had to let him go. Well, Rand Paul didn't let him go, but Jack stepped down voluntarily as a way to not get Rand into trouble anymore, and that was the right move because Rand was getting all this heat for having this quote-unquote racist staff member. But that just goes to show you how careful you have to be when you're adopting symbols of something that maybe you don't know and you don't understand exactly who it is you're associating with. And they say, oh, that this is a flag of history and of heritage and all of that, but that is not what it has been associated with.
But what is the heritage? That's what you always have to ask.
Right.
Whenever I see those bumper stickers, it's heritage, not racism or
right.
something like that.
Right.
And then you engage in a dialogue with those people. And they always end up being racist.
They always inevitably end up being racist.
But I have that bumper sticker.
Right. I say I'm not racist, so I'm not. But then, you know, you start talking about the blacks, and then it's all of a sudden, you know, you get into racist town. You know, another argument that the conservatives and some libertarians like to say, and not real libertarians, because when a libertarian starts talking about states' rights, you got to start questioning them. That's
states' rights.
Right. That's called paleo-libertarianism, I like to call it paleo-conservatism. And I'm going to read to you the definition of paleo-libertarianism here in a moment. And we're going to talk about the history in the United States. But let me finish here. This is the politics of it. Carly Fear, it's about the states' rights to own slaves. I wanted to make that point. Yeah, it's about states' rights. It's about the states' rights to own slaves. We'll get back to that in a minute. Carly Fiorina was the only other Republican to agree with Romney. Good for you, Carly. But she, too, said that the state should make the decision. Ted Cruz told the Washington Post that South Carolina should make the decision, though he understood both sides of the debate. Oh, Ted, come on. Quit pandering. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, also a GOP candidate for president, told CNN, "It works here. That's what the state house agreed to do." That's not a bad Lindsey Graham accent, is it? "You could probably visit other places in the country near some symbol that doesn't quite strike you right. We're not going to give this guy an excuse about a book he might have read or a movie he watched or a song he listened to or a symbol out anywhere. It's him, not the flag." Now, Hillary Clinton called for the flag's removal years ago, but critics pointed out that she and her husband were silent about Confederate Flag Day and other rebel reminders in Arkansas when Bill Clinton was a governor there. So many of us hoped that by electing our first black president, we had turned this page on this chapter in history, she said. And President Barack Obama later Saturday tweeted, "Good point, Mitt," and he was linking to Romney's 8 a.m. tweet. So, yeah, this is an unwelcome distraction, they say, for conservatives. But it is the kind of issue. Now we've got people from American Conservative Magazine. You've got people calling for the furling of the Confederate flag and the taking down of it, because this was historically associated in the 1960s with the anti-civil rights movement. And no matter what the soldiers from 1860 to 1865 fought for, their symbol has been appropriated.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the high, lofty principles or ideals of the you say that the Southern Confederates had, one of those principles and ideals was slavery, the maintenance of slavery. And you can't argue with that. If you think that I'm wrong, please go read the letters of Articles of Secession that the states wrote, where they maintained specifically that they were seceding for the express purpose of maintaining chattel slavery. And so we have to discuss this as a broader movement in the Republican Party and as a more localized movement in the libertarian movement, because we do have a legacy of racism, of people who have associated libertarian ideals with racist politics. And we want to talk about that. Before we do, we're going to finish the news of the day. We were talking about Earl Holt earlier. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, for Rand Paul's credit, he told Politico today that he's going to be donating any money that came in to the Mother Emanuel Hope Fund, which was the fund set up for victims of the Charleston shooters.
And Ted Cruz returned the money that was donated to his campaign.
Right, exactly. So now we're going to be talking about Ron Paul, the newsletter controversy, Rand Paul, paleo strategy, and we're going to be talking about some of these people that I would consider some of these people close friends, some of them acquaintances. But they did a bad thing in the 80s and 90s, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to discuss this because we need to head this kind of stuff off of the past. Rand Paul's running president, so Rand Paul won't be tarred with a poor legacy of his father. His father has left a great legacy, but there have been some very shady associations that Ron Paul has had in the past and some strategies that I believe are not libertarian. Ron Paul has, ever since these newsletters came out, denounced them and called racism an ugly form of collectivism, similar chanting the same thing that Ayn Rand said about racism. And unfortunately, however, there was a strategy called the paleo strategy. And this is a form of libertarianism that was developed by anarcho-capitalists theorists Murray Rothbard and Lou Rockwell that combines cultural conservatism in social thought and behavior with a radical libertarian opposition to government intervention. Tenets in history. This is, I'm reading from Wikipedia, guys, and some of this stuff I know is not the proper terminology, so I'll make efforts to correct it when I believe it's incorrect. Paleo-libertarianism, which I would rather call paleo-conservatism, developed in opposition to the social progressivism of mainstream libertarianism. So the problem was that Murray Rothbard and Lou Rockwell and Ron Paul and these guys saw that the liberalism, they say progressivism, they really mean social liberalism. Because progressivism, ladies and gentlemen, defined means you believe that government is the solution to society's problems. I'm socially liberal. I'm not socially progressive, because even though I live my life in a, you know, sort of sex, drugs, rock and roll kind of manner, it doesn't mean that I want to impose those forces, those beliefs on anyone else. And so the ideology was presented in Murray Rothbard's essay that he wrote called Right-Wing Populism, A Strategy for the Paleo Movement, in which Rothbard reflected on the ability of paleo libertarians to engage in, quote, outreach to rednecks. And boy, have we got a lot of rednecks in this liberty movement. And he founded it on social conservatism and radical libertarianism. He cited former KKK Grand Wizard David Duke and former U.S. Senator Joseph McCarthy as models for the new movement. This is Murray Rothbard, the hero of anarcho-capitalists everywhere. In his essay, The Case for Paleo-Libertarianism, Rockwell charged mainstream libertarians with, quote, hatred of Western culture, of which there probably are some, and that might be a fair charge. He argued that, quote, pornographic photography, free thinking, chaotic painting, atonal music, deconstructionist literature, Bauhaus architecture, and modernist films have nothing in common with the libertarian political agenda. Can you imagine?
Free thinking
has nothing in common with libertarian political philosophy. That's amazing. Wow. I mean, Rothbard's been wrong and said a lot of stupid shit, but that's probably some of the dumbest things I've ever heard him say. Of paleo libertarians, he said, we obey and we ought to obey traditions of manners and taste. I guess he wouldn't have cared for Miley Cyrus, who I love. After explaining why cultural conservatives could make a better argument for liberty to the middle classes, Rockwell predicted, in the new movement, libertarians who personify the present corruption will sink to their natural level, as will the Libertarian Party, which has been their diabolic pulpit. Lou Rockwell and Murray Rothbard supported paleoconservative Republican candidate Pat Buchanan in the 1992 U.S. presidential election and described Buchanan as the political leader of the, quote, paleo movement. In 1992, Murray Rothbard declared that, quote, with Pat Buchanan as our leader, we shall break the clock of social democracy. 3 years later, he said, Buchanan developed too much faith in economic planning and centralized state power, which eventually led paleo libertarians to withdraw their support for Buchanan. Rothbard died in 1995. And in 2007, Rockwell stated he no longer considered himself, quote, a paleo-libertarian, quote, and was happy with the term libertarian. I thought you were an anarchist, Lou. Mm-hmm. Controversies. Okay, so paleo-libertarianism has sometimes been identified with racism. Sometimes, political scientist and lesbian feminist activist Jean Hardisty describes paleo-libertarianism as entailing, quote, explicit racism, anti-Semitism, and sexism. Which it absolutely does. She notes Murray Rothbard's praise of the bell curve, a paleo-libertarian work which argued that black people are genetically inferior to white people with respect to intelligence, Yeah, Laura's looking very uncomfortable. And the Rothbard-Rockwell reports publishing of an article written by Sam Francis, which asserted that of the two major races in the United States today, only one possesses the capacity to create and sustain suitable levels of civilization. Wow. During Ron Paul's run for the presidency in 2008, paleo-libertarianism was identified by several sources as the ideological influence behind the racist sentiments and language expressed in the Ron Paul newsletter circa 1989 and 94. The libertarian publication Reason asserted that a half dozen longtime libertarian activists, including some still close to Paul, had identified Lou Rockwell as the, quote, chief ghostwriter of the letters. Rockwell denied it. So let me just tell you a real quick story, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, Laura, because you just got exposed to this stuff this morning. In 2008, I was working as a volunteer for Ron Paul's presidential campaign out of New York City, and we had about 1,200 volunteers and a very good staff of all-volunteer managers managing this group. And we were kicking butt. We were very excited about Ron Paul and very idealistic and perhaps a bit naive, but, you know, willing to do what was necessary to try and advance libertarian ideas through Paul's presidency, raising millions of dollars and having a general kick-ass time. Until the newsletter controversy broke. And in 2007 or 8, when this came out, I remember what happened. It destroyed our ability to fundraise and to manage operations because half of the managerial team quit. I mean, I still have emails from back in the day from my Gmail account. I can still read back in the day. I was going through them this morning about the amount of debate that was going on with the leaders of our meetup group. And, you know, we were the top number one fundraisers in the country for Ron Paul. And half of our leadership staff quit because of these newsletters that came out and the controversy. And it wasn't just because they were afraid of the controversy. It was because they read the newsletters, and a lot of these kids were black. A lot of these kids were, you know, Muslims, and there were a lot of minorities that were working for Ron Paul because they believed in what he said and when he talked about individual liberty. And this paleo strategy represents a departure from the ideas of individual liberty. And
I feel, go ahead. I was going to say, I feel like learning that Santa Claus wasn't real and that all your gifts were actually stolen from a pawn shop and wrapped underneath your tree. Like, everything you thought had been true was a lie. I would feel very deceived.
Yeah. I felt deceived. And I felt like, you know, that I had been betrayed a bit by the leadership and of the Liberty Movement for not coming out and sort of owning up to this. Now, a lot of people were pissed at Lou Rockwell, because Lou, instead of claiming responsibility when Ron was running for president and getting high in the polls, Lou denied it and said that he was not the author of the newsletters. He didn't claim responsibility for it. And it sort of like threw Ron under the bus. And a lot of people were upset about that. A lot of people were disappointed for that. And Ron, sweet, sweet man that he is, he was not going to throw Lou Rockwell under the bus either. And there have been whispers that Jeffrey Tucker was there at the time of the newsletters. Nobody has ever accused him of writing them, but he was there writing while that stuff was going on. So he was a part of the paleo strategy. And Jeffrey Tucker is the one that I'm closest to out of all these guys and who I love dearly and who is not racist. But Jeffrey, we saw this morning you were on a thread with Ovens O'Brien, and Ovens, somebody had posted a picture of Jeffrey Tucker and asked, it's this stupid social democrat CNX Tuesday that's always hounding the libertarian movement, which is hilarious because it takes a hateful Democrat to point out the real inconsistencies and problems in our movement. She attacks me all the time, but of course she's wrong about me. but she attacked Jeffrey Tucker as being privy to the knowledge of what was going on there. And Jeffrey and I have had conversations about this stuff before, and he never told me directly names of people who were involved in doing things, but I could tell from Jeffrey's behavior that, and his body language, that he was very uncomfortable with what was coming out of the Mises Institute during this time, or that was the racism that people embrace. And, you know, if you know anything about Thomas DiLorenzo, or if you know anything about the Mises Institute, they do frequently publish a lot of I Hate Abraham Lincoln pieces, and they do publish that. That's a very common thread in the Liberty Movement, is to hate Abraham Lincoln. They call him the Great Centralizer instead of the Great Emancipator. And at first, I kind of ran with that. It was kind of exciting, you know, because I think a lot of people sort of, they tend to like the...
Against the grain.
Contrarianism.
Rebel.
Yeah, we like to rebel. As libertarians, we like to rebel. We like to, you know, we like to flash our libertarian cred in front of people and be like, who could possibly hate Abraham Lincoln?
Actually.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. you know, there are criticisms to be made of Abraham Lincoln, but freeing the slaves and crushing the slaveholding governments of the South is not one of them. You know, freeing the slaves by executive order is not one of the things that you could criticize Lincoln for. You can try, but you're not going to win the arguments from any moral high ground in such a way. Oh, the thing is that this guy, and this all comes back to Dylann Roof, and this all comes back to the symbology of the battle flag. I've been to Richmond, I've been to the Museum of the Confederacy, and we saw last night that someone spray painted the tomb, or it was not a tomb, it was a... Somebody spray painted this Confederate soldier's monument. Let me read this here. Yeah, the Charleston statue was vandalized. Police are investigating vandalism to a statue at White Point Garden in Charleston's Battery. The statue was vandalized with messages that included Black Lives Matter marked in red spray paint. On another side of the statue's base, paint reads, Riley and Haley, this is the root of our evil. A third message reads, why defend this evil? The statue was erected in 1932 to the defenders of Charleston, Fort Sumter, by the Charleston chapter of the United Daughters of the Confederacy. Now, they call themselves defenders of Charleston, Fort Sumter. But if you remember, the history was that they weren't the defenders of Fort Sumter. They were the attackers of Fort Sumter. So the monument itself is a lie. And it says it's a lie because it says that they're the defenders of Charleston, but they weren't. They were the aggressors, and they fired first. In every instance, the Confederacy, when presented with an option to delay the war or to put it down, the Southern hotheads were desperate. They were desperate for war. They wanted war. Abraham Lincoln becomes president. They say, oh, well, it was because of Abraham Lincoln. All he did was win the presidency, and they seceded. So when they say, oh, it was Abraham Lincoln, it was the argument from the Southern Confederates. All of their arguments don't hold water because they read this revisionist history from Tom DiLorenzo and other people, and they believe it, that the South seceded supposedly over tariffs and all this BS, because the vice president of the Confederacy, I'm trying to remember what his name was. Alexander H. Stevens wrote a book after the war was over that was all revisionist history, and he was the one, and this is what the revisionist historians, like people like Tom DiLorenzo and others, and I think Tom Woods has written some revisionist history of the Confederacy, which he didn't get into with our debate a couple of weeks ago. We didn't get into that, and it's one of the interesting things about anarcho-capitalists that I've been ripping into them is that they're like, oh, we're anarchists, right? But why are there so many rebel flags flying? On these,
because the aggression hasn't changed, it's just been integrated.
Here's what my point was with these rebels, with these fascists in the Liberty Movement, okay? So they call themselves anarchists, right? But every anarchist movement in history that has resulted in, you know, the creation of a government, they've always been anarchists first, okay? And then after the revolution was over, they took power and they became communists. And this is a movement of people that they would be anarchists first and fascists second. Because if the Southern white Confederates, the racists of the Deep South, were to take power, do you think they would be libertarian? Fuck no. There's nothing libertarian about these people.
Sure.
They call themselves anarchists and anarcho-capitalists because many of them are confused. But some of them aren't confused, Laura.
They want to be anarchists because they want to control people?
They want to be anarchists because they want to destroy the current government and replace it with a fascist state of their own. They want the states to secede so that they can institute Jim Crow, so that they can institute racial laws and segregation. And they say that they bear the Confederate flag as a gesture of, you know, historical romanticism. Like maybe 10 of them in the South do that aren't, you know, toothless cousin fuckers. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about. But
I love that you can say that on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But the reality is Vice President Alexander Stevens, he called slavery the cornerstone of the South. He said it was the cornerstone of industry. And that institution needed to be torn down. And if not through diplomacy, then through violence. And one of the other criticisms that the revisionists will make on the North, they'll say, well, Abraham Lincoln didn't care about freeing the slaves. He wanted to send them back to Africa, and he would have made slavery legal for all time if only the South would have stayed in the Union. And these are all true accusations that were made at Lincoln. But of course, Lincoln did evolve. And you should read one of my favorite libertarian historians. His name is Lou Lehrman. Very good buddy to Ron Paul. And Lou Lehrman wrote, he sat on the Gold Commission with Ron Paul and voted against he was against Ronald Reagan and Milton Friedman. So if you're a hardcore anarchist, Murray Rothbard loving guy, and this is the first time you're hearing this voice, you need to go look up Lou Lehrman, who wrote a speech, Lincoln at Peoria. And it's a speech that Abraham Lincoln gave where he was discussing his turn about the question of slavery, about when slavery became the issue. The Southern historians say, well, the North wasn't fighting against stop slavery. They were fighting for reunification of territories. Okay, let me ask you a question, Laura.
Okay.
Let's say a horrible rapist enslaves you, takes you and puts you in a basement. Like, you've seen those like creepy guys that keep women in their basement for years and rape them and all that. Torture chambers. Now let's say that there was a racist cop, okay, and he hated ginger white girls like you, okay? Let's say he's a black guy, right?
Okay.
Let's say, and now he kicks in the door, kills the racist, and kills the guy who kept you in the basement, frees you from chains, and he says, "Get out of here, white girl. You're free." You know what I mean? And makes some statement, like even slaps you on the ass as you go. Uh-huh. You know, some sexual harassment on top of that.
Okay.
Do you care that he's a racist?
No.
Do you care that he's
a
sexist?
No. I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit.
I'm free.
Thank you for freeing me. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the problem with these white Southern racists, these neo-Confederates, these anarcho-capitalists now, fascists later, mm-hmm. is that they think as they think that the motive matters more than the action, right? It's just like they're giving into the politician's trap for the politicians who say they want to do something, right? They say they do things, but they do something else, right? And so the problem here is that revisionist historians have attached themselves to the libertarian philosophy, and we should repudiate them, especially in light of this shooting. We don't want anything to do with Dylann Roof. We don't want anything to do with Murray Rothbard's toxic legacy of paleo-libertarianism. And we want nothing to do with the Confederate symbols. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's much more strategic also to be proactive in repudiating claims like this instead of trying to bury it or trying to
ignore it.
Yeah, I think it would do better for everyone to come out against it instead of hide from it. Being proactive is much more effective than trying to defend yourself once you've been backed into a corner.
That's correct. Exactly. And you don't get any credit for doing the right thing when you have no other choice. You know, another item that somebody trotted out the other day was, well, General Lee freed his slaves, you know, at the end of the war. You know, they were freeing slaves. Yeah, they were freeing slaves because they were giving them their freedom so that they could fight for the Confederacy. And they said, if you fight for the Confederacy, you'll be free at the end. So again, you're not giving your historical revisionism is ignoring key factors. It's sort of like saying, like, if I was the guy who was, you know, keeping you in my basement.
Blackmail.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. If the cops came in and put a bayonet to my throat and I finally freed you, nobody's going to say, oh, look what a moral high ground
right.
he has.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you don't get the moral high ground when you have no other choice. You only get it when you do the right thing, when you do have a choice, when you make the right decisions. And, you know, the true heroes of the war were the Harriet Tubmans, you know? They were the John Browns, the people that the Southern nationalists hate and despise. The true heroes were those Union soldiers who fought to free those slaves. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but you don't get credit for doing the wrong thing, just like we don't give credit to the Nazis who fought to, in the camps, you know, they said they were just following orders. You don't get that excuse. Libertarians don't give that excuse to the Nazis. They don't give that excuse to cops, racist cops in the United States. But they do give that excuse to the Southern Johnny Reb. They say, oh, well, Johnny Reb wasn't fighting for slavery. He didn't have any idea. He was just trying to fight to keep states' rights. And he didn't even have any slaves.
States' rights to do what?
States' rights to keep slaves.
Yeah.
And let's end this podcast with a note of remembrance that states don't have rights. States have powers. Only people have rights. Individual people. So if you consider yourself a states' rats libertarian, you are no libertarian, sir. You are a statist. And so if the true goal is anarcho-capitalism, you cannot associate yourself with the slaveholding governments of the South. You can rightly criticize both the North and the South and say to hell with both of them, but you cannot identify with the most racist, institutionalized, biggest governments that the United States has ever seen. And you should praise Abraham Lincoln. If you love people who destroy states, Abraham Lincoln destroyed some of the most dangerous governments that have ever existed in the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Freedom Report podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show today. Sorry, such a somber topic. I know a lot are going to be pissed off. Well, you know, too bad. Go out in your outhouse and bang your cousin. And enjoy. Thanks very much for listening to Freedom Report podcast. Go to iTunes.com, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. A 5-star review will help us spread the message of liberty, classical liberalism. You don't like that? Too bad. Freedom, mother, because do you speak it? We want to have you guys go to iTunes, leave us that good review. And of course, if you enjoy us, you can leave a written review. That's the best way to help us out. If you don't have an Apple device, Stitcher, Stitcher.com. Go to Stitcher.com and download us. Don't forget to come back every single day to your home for the non-racist economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.